This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Good evening, and welcome to the Friday Twilight Show with me, Claire Cannon. Thank you for joining me here on Teachers Talk Radio. This evening, exploring what options there are for redesigning the length of school terms and school holidays. And we will hear from one school leader who has already done just that and discuss the impact that these changes have had.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Thank you again for joining me this evening on the Friday Twilight Show. This evening, talking all things school year, the structure of the school year, why we have six terms in most cases, why the school holidays fall at sort of set times of year, but also why they can change. Thinking about the discussions around the length of the summer holiday, there's been quite a few in the press recently. 2022, there was some talk in Wales about reducing down to 4 weeks. And there's some schools that have actually already gone and done something very different. So I'm going to spend some time having a think about what the current structure is like, why we have it, a couple of examples from other places, and later in the show, I'm hoping to be joined by Warren from the Premier Academy in Bletchley. And in his school, term times have been structured in a very different way. They use something called a learning block. I'm hoping Warren will be able to talk us through why he introduced those changes, why his school has them, what impact that has had. And that's in many different ways, many different impacts. For example, learning, progress, whether it's affected attendance, and also things like staff wellbeing. And of course, anytime you change things like a school holiday structure, the impact on families. So I'd be really interested to hear what he says when he joins us later on. Now, we all know that the school year, as it is for most people, it means a 6 week holiday in the summer. Quite often, something that is referred to as a sort of perk of the job, but you know, more recently and more commonly, also something that is mentioned as being much needed for teachers, for school staff who just need that period of time for rest, for recuperation, and just to kind of decompress, spend a bit of time with their families doing things that they enjoy doing, that perhaps, you know, the pressures of a school year and a school day can make quite difficult. So be interesting to hear from Warren, because the way that they have structured their term has affected the length of the holidays, but it also means that there are other breaks in the year which perhaps come around more frequently than we are typically used to. So, you know, when he is able to join us later on, be really interesting to hear what his thoughts are. And if anybody is listening and got some suggestions, I'd love to hear from you, your comments on the various points that are raised, and if you have any ideas of your own, and if you're listening from a school that has done something different, it'd be lovely to hear from you too. So, you know, one of the things that's often picked up is the length of the autumn term. Looking back at my calendar for this year, I think it was about an eight week and a 7.5 week half term one and half term two, taking us through to the Christmas break. For some people, actually going back after Christmas varied anywhere between about the 2nd or 3rd of January through to the 8th. Some people finishing quite late and going back quite early, combined with the busyness of Christmas itself, perhaps doesn't always feel like the break that is needed towards the end of term. Now, I personally have a couple of friends who work in private sector, although I work in state education myself. But those friends, those colleagues, they quite often talk about having a 2 week half term holiday in October. So interesting that those schools have already got a slightly different model. I know there's obviously a lot of other things that perhaps are at play with the structure of some of the private education system. However, that idea of having a longer break in the middle of what is a very long term, that does seem to be something that reading around online is an idea that's gaining quite a bit of traction, and a few people sort of starting to take that idea a little bit further of having that longer break in the middle of the autumn term, just really for staff well-being. And obviously it's a season where, you know, illnesses, coughs and colds, winter viruses, things like that very often affect things like staff attendance and pupil attendance too. So interesting in those schools whether that's had an effect in a positive way, acting as what we used to call a circuit breaker a few years ago. So yeah, lots to think about, lots of variations already in place in small ways. But it'd be really exciting to hear from Warren. I can see you've just joined, Warren, thank you, to discuss what your school has done in a little while. So just before we do that, a bit of background on why we actually have term times at all. So I was doing a little bit of reading on the Oxford Royal website, and it was quite interesting actually, because, you know, where did we even get this idea of term times and holidays from? And clearly we can't just be at school for 190 days straight with no breaks and then have half the year off. But where did this kind of split come from? So I started looking back and I ended up finding out that back in 1880, there was a law enacted. Now, this made it compulsory for children who were aged between 5 and 10, so roughly our sort of primary school age now. Those children aged 5 and 10 had to attend school. And this was introduced in the Elementary Education Act of 1880. And interestingly, there's actually some parallels with things today, because it also saw the introduction of what were called attendance officers. And for these people, it was their job to go round to the houses of children who hadn't turned up for school, and to find out where they were and what was going on, when they were going to be back. However, what was a particular challenge at the time was that it was hard for families who were on low incomes to comply with the law, because the income that they could gain from sending their children out to work was so valuable. So in an attempt to combat this, employed children who were under the age of 13, so again, we have higher age thresholds now, but, you know, we have work permits and things like that some of you may have seen for your students. But employed children who at the time were under the age of 13 were obliged to have a certificate indicating that they'd reached a certain level of education, and there were penalties in place for anybody employing children who lacked this certificate and were under that age of 13. Now, again, age ranges have changed, but there's definitely some parallels there with whether it's SATs, whether it's 11 plus, or whether it's, you know, GCSEs. But there's an emphasis on getting to a certain level, a certain point in your education. Anyway, how did that get to term time? So in 1893, so about 13 years after the initial act, the school leaving age was raised from 10 to 11. It was also, interestingly, made compulsory for children who were blind and deaf to receive an education. So the introduction of the sort of rudimentary of special educational needs provision. After that, they introduced a school leaving age up to the age of 12. And then they said to be able to achieve the required certifications, pupils needed to attend for enough time in order to learn the content. So this idea of being in school for enough time was the initial basis for having an amount of time in school that's, you know, children must attend, that must be open. And also then that actually they couldn't do that in one block, but that they had to do, you know, it was better to split that over some periods of time and have some breaks in between. So several education acts later, we get to the 1960s, education by this point has been expanded, it's covering more and more age groups. Both genders are getting more access to education, particularly girls. And there were new standards coming in, so I mentioned already things like the 11 plus. So all of this was sort of adding to the level of expectation and increasing the amount that students were expected to do, and therefore staff as well. So the necessity, I can't speak this evening, for breaks became even more apparent. Now, a really popular idea, which I found out is somewhat an urban myth, is that the summer holidays, the 6-week summer holidays, was so described for children to be able to help out with the harvest on their farms. However, there's actually a little bit more history to it that I found out, which is quite interesting. And the original summer break came from a time when people were more actively involved in the church, mostly Christianity back then, and that there were holidays and festivals to be celebrated that were, you know, quite a few of them in those summer months. And then this kind of idea of having the 6-week break kind of suited what happened over the next little while. So 18th century, we had the introduction of the Grand Tour. Then moving on, 19th century, people started to have more options to travel, things like going to the seaside, going on holiday. Obviously, the weather is generally better in the summer. And then in the 20th century, again, even more people taking holidays, and the introduction of statutory duties on employers to allow leave from work. And obviously, as time went on, international travel became more of an option. And all of those things, you know, are better. We all know they're better when it's sunny, it's nice and warm. So this idea of having the 6-week summer break just made sense. And it's, you know, it's not until recently that it started to be challenged a little bit more. So that was just a little bit of background to sort of think about how we did come to get those summer holidays. And obviously we've come to accept them, and there are plenty of other arguments for keeping them. As I mentioned earlier on, well-being of teachers and recharging for teachers, school staff and pupils, all really important and really valid arguments. But there are some alternative models out there. So I'm just going to hear from, you know, our sponsors. We'll have a short break to hear from them. And then we're going to come back and have a think a little bit more about some of the arguments around our current term time structure.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
Introducing Eton X from Eton College, a diverse range of quality online courses enabling young people to aspire and excel. Designed for self-study, these web-based courses empower your students with essential leadership, communication, and academic skills for success at school and beyond. Our Study Skills course sharpens their learning abilities, while the AI Fundamentals course equips them with vital digital know-how in a fast-changing world. Other popular courses include verbal communication, critical thinking, writing skills, resilience, creative problem solving, and many more. Offer the Eton X curriculum in your school for free. Visit etonx.com to find out more.
Okay, thank you for our sponsors there. Quite often we hear from them. I'm talking this evening about the structure of the school year and what it could look like if we changed how we, you know, where we put our term times, the length of our term times and the length of our school holidays, whether there are some things that we could do that would help promote well-being of staff and students, but as well as support some of the issues that are really current around recruitment, retention of staff, and obviously attendance. That's something that's in the news again at the moment about the amount of time that, you know, is being lost or recorded as lost learning time. So if you do have any ideas, any thoughts, I'd love to hear from you. So please do text in. The more creative, the better, even if it feels like it's a little bit out there. It'd be great to hear from you. So, mentioned earlier on that, you know, sometimes there are different models. Some of you listening may work in the private sector or have experience working in schools outside of the UK. And there are many different examples around the world, actually, of different school year structures. I mentioned at the beginning that in Wales, back in 2022, there was a consultation which was on shortening the summer holiday to 4 weeks. Now, this was quite a sort of provocative statement to have made, and it prompted quite an outpouring of reasons why people wanted to keep the 6 weeks. There was a big emphasis on staff and students needing a break to rest and recuperate from the intensity, really, of a school year. So I had a little bit of a read, and there was a nice article actually that I read in The Guardian that really sort of summarised the different opinions and different arguments. So talked a lot about the disparities in academic attainment, and particularly around reading and language growing during breaks. So the disparity between different pupil groups. We talk a lot about pupil premium, about pupils with SEN, and also people saying that, you know, this might be explained by levels of access to books, to activities, to what we sort of refer to as cultural capital, visits to museums, theatres, things like that. Very much sort of comments around the fact that these are all activities that help, you know, broadly speaking, affluent pupils to grow, and those who are perhaps disadvantaged in some way to, you know, have less opportunity to do so. However, there were also some people advocating against reducing summer holidays, saying it's not all about academic outcomes, thinking that actually there are pupils who progress through sports, through being outside, through being perhaps part of their community in other ways. So as I said, there's definitely arguments for keeping the 6 week break, predominantly focused around well-being. There was also an interesting remark made actually about play being important as time with your family. And that doesn't have to be anything special, doesn't have to be anything fancy, but just play as in, you know, getting a board game out, doing some drawing together, spending some time kicking a football around, whatever it is. And obviously, you know, for the 6 week summer break, that is, as I said before, the best time of year, most likely anyway, for the weather in terms of being able to get outside. On the flip side of that, there is this loss of learning and the time taken to sort of catch that back up. As we said, the disproportionate adverse effect on certain groups of pupils. And there's also, you know, another argument that's been sort of put forward in more recent times. I think it was Marcus Rashford and some of the sort of campaigns over the previous few years around lack of access to food. It's not just around missing out on being in education and being in a classroom, but actually the more holistic needs of some of our youngsters perhaps, you know, do take a hit when they're away from school for a substantial period of time. There was a study in the US about some schools that changed the length of their holiday, actually made it shorter in the summer and used those weeks to break up the year elsewhere. But unfortunately for them, it didn't actually work as they'd expected and how they'd hoped, because they found that, you know, obviously not everybody, but some staff left to go to other schools which had kept the longer holidays. And the argument was that was because they wanted the length of the break just because it was a nice length of time. But also if they'd got students themselves in other schools where the summer holidays differed, it made it quite challenging. And there was another example of a couple of schools that did a trial over in Bristol. They looked at changing the structure and shortening the holiday, putting it at slightly different times as well, because, you know, one of the things that we know can affect attendance, particularly just before a holiday, is, you know, is when parents take a term time holiday because of the difference in price, by and large. So what happened in Bristol? The I newspaper reported, this was in 2021, that the Bristol schools struggled to implement the change, partly, as we said, families with children in two different schools. If only one has changed its year, it made it really difficult for them to take holidays, made it difficult with childcare costs, logistics, time off from their own work. So it actually, you know, it wasn't something that was sustainable. The report did discuss that there was a positive feeling, although the actual trial hadn't worked, there was a positive feeling to changing to a 5-term year. However, it did note that if the government was serious about this change, that they people involved in the trial felt that every school would have to do it. Their comment actually, and this is a quote, was, "It's going to be mayhem if you've got 10,000 schools doing it and 10,000 schools not." So they really felt that for a new school year structure to be made to work, the government really need to have two key groups on side, the teachers and school staff, and also the parents. Now, interestingly, the education unions haven't ruled out supporting a change. And last month, the National Education Union actually said it was right to consider such ideas, especially in the wake of the pandemic. And they did actually get some input from sort of some specialists in education, social mobility, and just sort of some external people to have a look and provide their contributions too. And Lee Elliott Major, who is a professor of social mobility at Exeter University, said that actually having holidays at other points in the year could be something that would ease teacher fatigue. So yes, you'd lose the length of the summer holiday, maybe by a week or two, but by moving those holidays and having the breaks spread perhaps more strategically could actually combat some of the stress, some of the tiredness and exhaustion actually that some teachers report, particularly towards the end of those long terms. So in summary, it does seem that there's an appetite to try something new. However, it's how do we make that work? And is there ever going to be a way that we could get all schools on board with a new structure? Because the feeling very much is that it needs to be everybody doing the same thing to make it work. So I'll be really, really interested to hear after the news from Warren Harrison, because his school has got already a very different structure and they are the only school in their area that run that structure. The other schools still follow the traditional model that is sort of 99% of schools still do. So it'd be great to hear from him after the news about how he has made that work for him and the students that are in his local community and, of course, their families.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
Introducing Eton X from Eton College, a diverse range of quality online courses enabling young people to aspire and excel. Designed for self-study, these web-based courses empower your students with essential leadership, communication, and academic skills for success at school and beyond. Our Study Skills course sharpens their learning abilities, while the AI Fundamentals course equips them with vital digital know-how in a fast-changing world. Other popular courses include verbal communication, critical thinking, writing skills, resilience, creative problem solving, and many more. Offer the Eton X curriculum in your school for free. Visit etonx.com to find out more.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
The Guardian features an analysis of the impact COVID and austerity had on children in England. The article focuses on four key areas and contains some deeply concerning data. In terms of child poverty, 4.2 million children are in relative poverty, and young people experiencing destitution has tripled over the past 3 years. According to researchers, this means children facing such hardships may go without proper clothes or share a bed with a sibling, but it also means missing out on family outings and school trips. These children are also more likely to be affected by cuts to local amenities, including libraries, parks, and youth clubs, further reducing life opportunities. Schools in early years have struggled since the pandemic. Issues with children not meeting developmental milestones in EYFS and poor attendance and deteriorating behaviours are affecting primary and secondary age pupils. This, alongside crumbling school buildings, recruitment and retention difficulties, and soaring demand for SEND services, continues to impact pupils, particularly the disadvantaged. Health is also having a huge impact on outcomes. Declining services means problems are storing up for the future, particularly in the field of mental health. Record numbers of young people are being referred, 1.4 million in 2022 in England alone. In primary, 2 in 5 children in England leave primary school overweight, putting them at risk of diabetes, heart disease, and other issues for later in life. Child protection concerns are also on the increase. In 2023, 83,840 children were looked after, a steady increase year on year from 64,460 in 2010. Teenagers are now the fastest growing group of looked after children, with limited services in place to support. In response to the bleak statistics, many have called for a national plan for childhood to transform the life chances of many described as the left behind. This term was used by the Association of Directors of Children's Services, and the organisation said it was the narrow view of government to focus on a recovery plan just for education, when they should have looked at a recovery plan for childhood, as this would have addressed wider wellbeing issues. The organisation also called for a Department for Children to coordinate policy across government areas, not just education. A government spokesperson responded to the issues raised by highlighting recent changes to childcare and an increase in educational standards. In Scotland, teachers have been speaking to BBC News about what they describe as rising pupil violence. In Aberdeen, staff say some fear for their safety and are scared to go to work. The council is being called upon by unions to intervene, but it says it's already trying to support staff and address the underlying causes of poor behaviour. The EIS union surveyed 800 members in Aberdeen, and almost half reported violent pupil behaviour in school every day, and more than a third said they had been physically assaulted. The problem is reported in both secondary and primary schools. The council said any misbehaviour was unacceptable, and that it was considering all feedback from staff, saying everyone who visits and uses a school is entitled to a safe, peaceful, respectful environment. In another story from the BBC, this time from Bristol, the focus is on school children being failed as permanent exclusion rates rose. More than twice as many children in the city were permanently excluded last year compared to the past 2 years. There are now plans to offer early intervention in primary schools so serious issues can be resolved sooner. But some point to wider concerns which also need to be addressed if things are to change. Many media outlets have also reported on the new guidance on the use of mobile phones issued to schools in England. The guidance received mixed reviews, with some welcoming the clarity, whilst others described it as a non-policy for a non-issue. Many schools already have policies in place to deal with this. Education Secretary Gillian Keegan told BBC Breakfast the guidance aimed to offer consistency and that there is no place for mobile phones in our schools all the way through the school day. The government announcement comes shortly after Esther Jai, mother of murdered Brianna Jai, called for changes to the law to stop children accessing social media. There are currently no complete bans on mobile phones in schools in Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland, where education decisions are devolved from the UK. Finally, the writer of BBC Three's comedy drama Borders gave an interview on education and opportunity in code switching. The show about 5 black teens with scholarships to an elite boarding school focuses on issues such as our access to opportunity and the reality of feeling out of place at times. Daniel Lawrence Taylor used some of his own experiences at university to write as well as speaking to friends who attended private schools. He says code switching, changing accent, tone of voice and mannerisms depending on where or who a person may be with, was an important thing to highlight as many black people feel they have to code switch when entering majority white spaces. Taylor also says he wanted to show that whilst there may be benefits to attending academic institutions like the one in the show, there are challenges too, including making sure the environment is safe enough for those from different backgrounds to really take advantage and use the opportunity to its fullest. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
Okay, so this is the Friday Twilight Show. I'm Claire, and I can see, thank you, Warren, because I know there's been a few little technical issues, but I can see you are here. I think I can hear you as well. So I'd really like to welcome Warren, who's kindly joined me this evening, to talk all about how his school have completely changed the structure of the school year and how they've managed to maintain this, because I know other schools in their local area still follow the more traditional model. Warren, I hope you know, we can hear a little bit from you as well about the impact that the changes have had on things like staff well-being, attainment of pupils, and how how you manage sort of the perhaps challenges and questions from parents back when that was introduced. But if you could start by sharing a little bit about you and your role and the background of the school, that'd be lovely. Can we hear you, Warren? I heard you very briefly.
Can you hear me okay there? Yeah.
Lovely. Yes, I can hear you now. Yes, I was just hoping you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your school to start with.
Well, I'll do my best. And firstly, thank you for inviting me on this evening. I'll start with a brief synopsis. I'm Warren. I'm unfortunately the wrong side of 50. However, when I took on the headship of this school, I was a relatively young man. I became the head teacher of the, at the time there was 198 pupil primary school. That was in 2002. Yeah. In the 2 years prior to my arrival, it had been led by three different heads, and it was deemed to be a failing school. Yeah. And I think it's important to understand that it's understood in the context that it's serving a community in the highest 10% of social deprivation. So my introduction when I first arrived was the governors made it very clear to me. They wanted to see the school blossom. They wanted to see the reputation enhanced. And this message was delivered to me on the same day that they told me that there was £32,000 in the bank. We had 23 staff and a plummeting role. So no pressure there.
No.
Interesting what you touched on earlier as well about some of the private schools and what you were talking about with the consultation that had gone on in Wales, because my previous experience had been quite atypical, I think, in as much as I'd worked in international schools as well as for three different local authorities in the UK when I arrived here. And of course, those fee-paying international schools flourished or perished basically by whether or not the parents wanted to bring those children to those schools. And the expectation that those parents had included high achievement, breadth of experience, well-being, security, and combined with a genuine sense of belonging. So when I sit here now and I reflect on what I brought to this school, I can see that all those values that those parents were paying lots of money for, I just kind of got on with trying to instill into everybody and the community. Yeah. And fast forward 22 years, and we're one of the highest performing schools in the country. We've got fabulous resources. We've got 630 children on site, waiting lists in every year group. And only this week I found out that we've got nearly 200 applications into reception this coming year in a low birth year. So, so we're doing something right.
Definitely. And that was what I was going to say, actually. That just shows you're definitely getting something right. Now, one of the big things, isn't it, about your school is the very different structure to the term time. So, I mean, I've had a look because I had a little bit of a read, and I did mention when I contacted you that I did used to work in one of your local secondary schools. So, there's a little bit of a connection there. But, for everybody listening live or listening later on, what is it that your school have done with the school year?
Different half terms throughout the year. We have nine short terms, more or less of equal length, and we call them learning blocks.
Yeah.
And we've been doing this since 2008, actually. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, I dropped you just for a minute then, but then you came back in. So I heard you say you'd had 9 learning blocks and you brought them in 2008.
That's right. 9 learning blocks of similar lengths, which we think works better for the outcomes-wise, for children, for parents.
Yeah.
But it's multifaceted, this, though, because we combine it with another slightly out-of-kilter strategy that we do. We promote all our children in June. So you meet, we have a two-week break at the end of May, last week in May, first week in June, and then all our children are promoted. When I cast my mind back to my days at primary school, I remember that second half term in the summer, you know, a wind down, playing cricket with the teachers, trying to bowl them out whilst the teachers are trying to slog you out of the field. And then I remember sitting in the classroom and we'd have a test match on a black and white telly in the corner. So that wind down that used to happen, we don't do that here. What we try and do is we try and put the foot on the gas for that last half term.
Yeah.
The children have met their teacher, who they will have in September. They've had 6 weeks with them.
Yeah.
And so any anxiety that child might have over the summer holidays is taken away, really. And I'd never really understood how we can have one half term 8 weeks long, and then we can have another half term, which we've got at the moment, 4 weeks, 4 days.
Yeah.
Especially with the run up to Christmas, when you think about viruses and ailments, they run rife up to Christmas. Mm. Reception children are just adjusting to the demands of a full school day. So it just seemed to make sense. So in the traditional autumn term, what we have is we have a week at the end of September, and then we have a week in November, and it works brilliantly for us. Attendance wise, we've gone from 92% to 96%. Those fire breaks give everybody a rest. They give the teachers a rest. They give the kids a rest. And of course, in an area of deprivation like ours, it allows the parents the opportunity and the affordability, more than anything else, to be able to take those children away on a family holiday, be it in the UK or getting on a plane and it just allows them to do it at a fraction of the price that they'd have to pay during the summer.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it makes so much sense. And hearing you talk about it, I'm just thinking, why on earth is everyone else not doing this already? Because there's just, you know, so many, as you say, so many different sort of facets to it in terms of, you know, those holidays, that quality time together as a family, which possibly a bit of a sweeping statement, but I suppose, you know, for some of those families, that might be quite a difficult time, you know, in some of those sort of low income areas and areas of deprivation, you know, if they're having to also feel the pressures of, you know, the finances, the hit that you get if you try and take breaks in the main school holiday.
Absolutely. I mean, flights are cheaper for one, but also, some data that was published last week makes us the most ethnically diverse school in this local authority as well. So as you can imagine, we are inundated for requests for overseas trips, whether it's to visit family or for funerals and things that just happen. And because we take our holidays, they're not all out of kilter, but about half of them are. It does mean that those people can go and visit overseas families once again at a fraction of the price.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've sort of touched on, you know, your community, your local community, but those links with family, whether they're, you know, elsewhere in the UK or abroad, they're so important, aren't they? And that, you know, for well-being of the whole family, and I think would it be fair to say that's something that's perhaps supported the increase in your attendance as well?
Quite likely, because the parents report that they welcome spending quality time with the children who are in different phases of education and therefore with different needs. So many of them welcome the regular shorter separate breaks, allows them to focus their attention on all of the children more equitably.
Yeah.
I'd also say that I did some data crunching before I've come on this evening to to look at how many of our children have siblings in secondary schools, because I imagine that one of the arguments against this is that, you know, families are forced not to have the same holidays. And it's about 20% of our children attend Milton Keynes schools. There's more than that in secondary school, but because of the unique nature of Milton Keynes bordering three other authorities, lots of the siblings go out of Milton Keynes for their education. And whilst it wasn't relevant in 2008, I think it is quite relevant now that our secondary school that we feed into, even though we do feed into about 17 or 18 different ones, has changed its holidays as well. So it now has a two-week half term in October, November.
Okay.
So it's looking more and more tricky to align everybody together anyway.
So in a way that sort of at least reduces almost the power of that argument to say, you know, you're causing people to not align because there are other people starting to do their own thing as well.
More and more so.
Yeah. And I think that two-week half-term holiday, it feels for me like, you know, reading things online and everything, that's perhaps going to be the first thing that is sort of, you know, gets a critical mass behind it that will, you know, be the thing to change. And perhaps things then will lead on from there. I just wanted to go back because you mentioned two things that are really quite interesting. One being that you promote your children, put them up to the next year group, I'm taking from that, you know, in the summer term, so that they get that time with their new teacher. But also then the way you've structured what is a very long autumn term between September and Christmas for most schools, because you've broken it up a bit more, that's supporting your youngest learners, your students that are starting school for the first time. I'm just wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Oh, we can indeed. Although we're a 630 place school, we do have an on-site nursery as well, which means that in that last half term in June and July, we are able to start. We call it school readiness, so that the children start to move out of the nursery into the reception classrooms. And this year, for example, we've got 77 children coming from that nursery into school. So that.
Well, I'm hoping we get Warren back in a minute.
I know lots of schools phase their reception children in. Yeah. In the first week in September. And of course, the longer children are in school, the more opportunity to learn and the better they'll do. So attendance really is a key issue here. For a primary school located where we are geographically, in the UK, to have 96% attendance is a fantastic achievement.
I think any school would be proud to say that's where they're at in terms of attendance, wouldn't they, particularly now. Given your sort of locality, that's incredible. So obviously the structure has worked in terms of, you know, that need for getting children in school. The school readiness bit sounds brilliant. But what about the other adults? What about the staff? How do they feel about it?
Well, like I said about allowing the parents the opportunity to take the children away for a fraction of the price, the staff also benefit from this. We don't prosecute parents in the way that I know that some schools do, because lots of parents take children out during term time. And everybody knows when they come to work here. So when we recruit a new member of staff, they know that our holidays are different. And by and large, what many of them do, if they've got young children, is they'll bring the children to this school. I did with mine, and my head of education, she did with her too. So that worked well for the family as well.
And I think that says a lot, doesn't it, when you've got staff that want to have their own children in that school. That's such a big sort of tick in the box, isn't it, for the school doing the right thing. It really is. Now, you've mentioned, obviously, parents and things like them being able to take holidays, but just going back to when you first sort of were introducing this idea, how did you sort of go about sharing that in a way that, you know, meant the parents kind of understood it, that they bought into what you were trying to do? And did you get any resistance to it?
We had a vote. We had a consultation and we had a vote. And a bit, we use first names here as well. Everybody's known by the first name. We did exactly the same kind of process when we introduced that. And we were inundated with support for it, basically.
Yeah.
We said we'd give it a go, and if it worked, we'd continue with it, and if it didn't work, then we wouldn't. And we ran with it for 2 years, and the feedback was tremendous.
Wow. And is that then how you've sort of used it, you know, used that as a catalyst almost to sort of keep the system going? And, you know, whereas, you know, I touched on earlier on some schools in Bristol that have tried to do something not dissimilar, actually, because they've gone for the five terms and, you know, shorter terms, breaking it up, structuring the holidays differently. But it failed because of the issues around matching up with other schools. So, you know, in terms of making it sustainable and keeping it going in the long term, is that, you know, what is it that's working for you?
Well, I think it's a selling point of the school. You know, I'm not attributing our success just down to having nine learning blocks. It's about rigor. It's about focus.
Yeah.
But it's about being innovative and looking for ways to improve things for everybody. And as I said, we've got a low birth year. The schools, none of the schools locally are full. And we've got nearly 200 applications coming this year for our 90 places in reception. So it's phenomenal, really.
And I was going to ask you, actually, because you mentioned that 200 application for places earlier on, but you hadn't mentioned how many places were actually available. So you've essentially got sort of over two children trying to get in for every one place that you've got, haven't you? Which
absolutely. And we've got a very small catchment area as well. So we're quite proud of the success that we've had.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, if you've got a moment, is
of course.
This is nothing. I know this is new in this current era, but going back in time, I grew up in Blackburn, which is an old Lancashire mill town, and with Blackburn, Burnley, and Bolton had staggered summer holidays even when I was a kid, because. Okay. Travel agents back then were getting overawed with everybody being at the same time, everybody trying to go on holiday at the same time. So they staggered. So Burnley broke up 2 weeks before Blackburn, and Blackburn broke up 2 weeks before Bolton, which seemed logical, but doesn't happen anymore.
That's interesting that it sort of went the other way. You know, if they had that system and it went the other way. I don't know if you know, but I'm that's made me curious now as to why they took that away. But there we go.
It'll be down to centralising power, no doubt.
On that note, actually, how have you had any sort of, I don't know, challenge or comments, you know, whether that's local authority, and, you know, not that we do things or don't do things for Ofsted, but obviously they are a... you know, people to factor into what we do. I don't know if they've sort of shared any of their thoughts on it at all.
No, they haven't. We once had an Ofsted inspector turn up when we were on holiday. they came back a couple of weeks later. kind of gave us the heads up that they were on the way.
Yeah, so that's the best time to see them, isn't it, when you're on holiday?
Yeah. I also think there's... Worth noting is that there's far less overlearning that has to be done for the children when they come back to school. So I've got friends who work in the Spanish system, because I worked in Spain for a number of years. Breaking up for 3 months in the summer, I found this, and then my colleagues at the time found this, that the first month back you would just be reteaching stuff that you'd already done in the previous year. So having more frequent shorter breaks, there's a lot less overlearning needs to take place.
And that actually ties into some of the bits I was finding out, and, you know, it makes sense. And you know, whether that's anecdotal evidence or, you know, whether it's sort of more rigorous scientific data around, you know, the amount of learning that is lost, or at least, you know, partly forgotten, and like you say, you have to repeat when you come back. And it was interesting, actually, you touched on school readiness and you were thinking about your younger students. I'm just wondering if we were to, you know, expand this model out to the secondary schools, would it be something then that you could use that kind of move them up before the summer holiday to actually facilitate that transition process into secondary school?
Well, I think you probably could, because we all know that testing in secondary school takes place in May, June. And then what happens to the children? When they leave in year 11, they have this enormously long summer break. And then, you know, my personal experience of secondary school was similar to the one I described at primary school. You do your exams and then you just relax for the last few weeks of the term. And it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be like that. So our year sixes, once they've done the SATs, they have a 2-week holiday, they come back and we start them on the year 7 curriculum, which gives them a head start for when they go into secondary school.
Yeah, and you've taken my next question, because I was going to ask you, it's fine, it's great, because I was going to say, you know, obviously we don't yet have that system where students can physically move to their new building in the summer term, but obviously for you, you know, what had you done to sort of work with that as best you can? And obviously, you know, you've touched on it there with the year sixes starting the year 7 curriculum. Mm-hmm. Do the year sixes, what do they say about that? You know, particularly if, you know, they've got friends perhaps in other primary schools that are going off on, I don't know, residential trips, or perhaps, as you said earlier, to, you know, taking their foot off the gas. Do they ever comment on that, or do they not really mind?
Well, I don't suppose they know any different, because they're here, but they go on a residential trip, many of them. We have a residential trip in the summer term. And they put on a show for the parents, and a lot of the work is we've got a theatre here, which was funded by virtue of us being one of the first Academy Convergents, which is why where the name the Premier Academy comes from. So that show goes out. We have a policy in school that every child performs on stage every year in front of parents. So it's a heck of an undertaking, but I think it's very worthwhile.
Yeah, it's really lovely to hear. You know, your school, you know, no school works just because of the way that it has its term time structure, everything else. But obviously, how you've linked that in with everything else that you're doing, it just sounds really lovely for the students that they're getting so many opportunities, but they're also getting the time, perhaps, to have those breaks, which I suppose in a way is a sort of form of being able to consolidate what they've done and be fresh and come back and build on that. And as you said, without having to do a lot of that, you know, repeat teaching of something they've done before.
I mean, if we were to align, then we'd be potentially benefiting 20% of the families. However, what we do, I consider we are benefiting 100% of our families.
Yeah, and you know, your statistics, you know, say everything, don't they? Your attendance, your, you know, family satisfaction, and all of those things. I'm just thinking, I know you've talked about the sort of socioeconomic background of a lot of your families, but you know, what about some of the other pupil groups that we do focus on? So, you know, your SEN students, for example, you know, how does the system, does it have any particular benefits, your system, for those students?
Well, everything becomes more accessible. It's not just flight prices. As soon as half terms kick in, as soon as Easter, Christmas holidays, everything goes up in price. So one of the nice things about having holidays when everybody else is at school, so it wouldn't particularly benefit either if everybody followed our system, is that you can get your kids out into the locality. You can take them to the local farms. You can take them where we are anyway. Take them into London. You can take them to the theatre. You can do things at a fraction of the price with no queues, basically.
Yeah.
And you can explore the country in a way that you just can't during a half term. Mm. So yeah, it gives opportunity, really.
Yeah. And does it sort of help them, you know, some of the students who perhaps, you know, are thinking about, you know, as I said to you before, you know, formerly a Senko in one of your local secondary schools. So I do always have that sort of narrative around, you know, what is happening for those children. You know, are they, do they find that their school day is more manageable? You know, I'm thinking about some students I've worked with that, you know, by week four, week five, they're pretty much done, and they've still got to get through another couple of weeks. And you really see it in their behaviour, their mental health, and unfortunately sometimes sort of escalations in what's going on. So do you find that that is reduced or changed because they're getting more frequent breaks?
They get the breaks, they get the rest, they're fresher, they're not full of bugs, and you know, children is just the same as adults. If you're not well, you don't perform as well. If you're fresh, then you're much better, aren't you? You function much better.
Yeah.
So yeah, 100%. I mean, 92% to 96% attendance has made a massive difference.
Yeah, and I think just picking up on that statistic, is that also as your school has expanded in size as well. So that 92% was when you were on lower numbers, and your 96% is based on the numbers you've got now.
I guess so, but as a percentage, I suppose it's all relative. The other thing I would say as well, especially when you look at Easter, is that the curriculum planning is more consistent. Mm-hmm. So because we know all our half terms are 5 weeks long, we don't need to adapt to fit in with varying term lengths.
Yeah.
And a bit like you were just touching on, Claire, as well, about being fresh and ready to work and accessing the curriculum. Outbreaks of childhood illnesses like chickenpox are more contained because we kind of have these fire breaks that, mm-hmm. that people were referring to during COVID. You know, I think we dealt with COVID really well. We sent very few children home.
And again, that's really good, isn't it? And especially in communities, you know, where they were saying that, you know, some of the communities that perhaps were, you know, the lower income were, again, disproportionately affected by things like COVID. So the fact that you were able to keep your children in school is massive, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think we sent 13 children home during the whole time.
Wow.
And I know some schools were sending year groups home.
Yes, so you're sending that home like en masse, 13 en masse, not just over the whole of the time.
I
actually hadn't thought as much about the curriculum when I was sort of putting together sort of thoughts and questions to sort of put to you and ask you. Mm-hmm. So that's actually made me think a little bit more about, you know, this isn't just about getting students into school, their attendance and their, you know, their well-being and feeling able to ready to learn, but actually how you sequence the curriculum, how you plan that out. So does that sort of, you know, staff really feel the benefits of that, obviously as well as the students in terms of their attainment?
I think people who are familiar with primary education will know that we operate with things like topic boxes. It means that we look, being an academy as well, we do our own thing. We loosely follow national curriculum where we think it's relevant, but we make it more about the kids in this locality and studying things that are real to them. And it allows us to tweak what we're doing annually rather than think, okay, well we're gonna teach the Romans for 4 weeks this year, but next year it's a 7 week topic.
Yeah.
So it helps enormously and allows you to focus and drill down on what went well and what could have gone better and tweak your curriculum as you go.
Yeah, and I suppose actually, you know, that idea, I mean, that's huge, isn't it? You're teaching, as you say, Romans for 4 weeks and then the next year suddenly it's seven. There's a lot of associated workload there that you've completely got rid of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our long-term planning, our medium-term planning is much more consistent.
Yeah.
Teachers love it.
Yeah. It sounds great, and I could carry on talking to you for a lot longer, but I'm mindful of your time, and you've been very generous coming to join me on a Friday evening at the end of a busy week, regardless of your holiday structure. You know, a school week's always a busy week, isn't it? So I just wanted to say a very big thank you to you, and just, you know, one last thing, if there was anything you would sort of share with other schools that are considering changing their structure, What would it be? What would you say to them?
Well, I would say if you want a conversation around it, then get in touch. I'm more than happy to meet up or
Warren, I think we lost you at the crucial time there. You said, that's amazing. That's a very kind offer. So thank you for that. We did just lose you there, and you said about people getting in touch with you. So I will just repeat that you made that offer, because that is very kind, very generous of you to do so. I will let you head off and enjoy the rest of your evening. Obviously, if you want to keep listening, that would be absolutely lovely. It'd be nice to have you. Thank you so much, because it has been, you know, a pleasure talking to you, and
okay,
you know, really sort of eye opening actually to hear what your school's doing.
Thanks,
all right, then. Thank you, Warren. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Okay, thanks now. Take care. Bye bye.
Thanks, Warren. Bye.
Bye bye.
Bye. Okay, another thank you to Warren there for joining us this evening. Really lovely to hear from him about the amazing things that he's doing at his school, not just about the structure of his school year, but things like the interactions between staff and students, the changes to sort of how they refer to one another, and the massive effect that you know, what he's doing has had on things like the attendance. I mean, 92% to 96%. You know, any school would be proud of that increase, and especially in the area that he is working in, that is absolutely immense. So, Warren, thank you again. It's been really, really good to hear from you. Now, I just want to tie in to some of the things that Warren has picked up on there. So one of his key themes was around that lost learning, the need to repeat things, overlearning when students have had substantial time away from school. And I did find some research in the BMC Public Health Journal from 2022 that sort of looked into this in a sort of scientific way rather than, you know, the sort of qualitative anecdotal evidence obviously we can get from hearing from our schools. What they did was they used some SDQs and some verbal reasoning tests. And they spoke to some students at various ages. They were 7, 11 and 14. What they found was that the sort of scores that were around borderline touching on to sort of concerns in terms of the SDQs, particularly for those aged 7 and 14, but not 11, they worsened after the summer holidays. They also found that on the verbal reasoning tests, the cognitive scores for the seven-year-olds were particularly affected. One of the suggestions was that the 6 weeks as a proportion of your life when you are seven is greater than the proportion of your life when you are perhaps older, 11 or 14. They did find that there were some things that didn't change as much, as I say, at the age of 11, particularly around pro-social behaviours. But again, it's important to factor in there that you've got the change from primary to secondary. So there's a lot of other things at play that perhaps have not skewed in a bad way, but perhaps have also been factors to consider in that data. The thing that they did find was quite a concern was around the worsening mental health, not just of the students, but actually of their families. And that there was a disparity between families from lower socioeconomic backgrounds compared to those who are perhaps a little bit higher. And we know, and as again, as Warren has said, we know that students need to feel well, they need to feel happy, they need to feel safe in order to learn. So it was, you know, a real sort of concern to see that there were these impacts and that they'd actually, you know, been able to measure them sort of rigorously using these questionnaires. So, you know, absolutely ties in with some of those points that Warren has picked up on in such a lovely way. And we do also have that need to support our staff. And as I said to Warren towards the end, I hadn't thought about the impact of the consistent length of terms on actually the curriculum planning. So Yeah, I'm going off my little script a bit here, but I thought that was such a good point and such a an important point, because we know that workload, that feeling stressed, feeling tired is a massive reason for staff leaving the profession at the moment. And what a way to really reduce the workload actually is to have fixed term times, because that idea of, you know, teaching the Romans or teaching anything for 4 weeks in one term, one school year, but then teaching it for 7 weeks the next year, just because Easter happens to fall at a different time or you've gone back at a slightly different time in the summer from the summer. You know, that's huge. And we do so much in schools to try and support the well-being of staff, but actually that's taking a much more sort of bigger picture, strategic look at it. So really, really interesting point. And thank you, Warren, for raising that, because that's really, really made me think this evening about perhaps how, you know, I work in a school, you know, whilst we're perhaps not in a position to completely change our structure at the moment, you know, there's definitely some takeaways for me there. So thank you for that. And, you know, burnout, exhaustion, all of those feelings, they are cited so often. And actually, we need our staff to feel energised, to feel ready to take on new challenges, and perhaps to take risks with implementing new ideas, with trying new teaching techniques, but also to have that feeling of wanting to actually do it in the first place. If you're tired, you're not going to want to do it. And I love the fact that you talked, Warren, about your all your children get the opportunity to get up on stage in a year. I don't know many other schools who offer that at all. And, you know, you need staff. You said it's a massive undertaking. You need your staff to be able to manage that for the students and to be able to facilitate that for them. So, you know, really tying everything in with the way you've structured your term time so that those breaks come around a little bit more often. And interesting as well, your approach to supporting families who perhaps need time away from school, because however anybody structures their school year, there are always going to be family events that happen, life events, families that perhaps follow, you know, culturally follow a slightly different pattern to their year. So interesting to hear how your approach has actually supported some of the families that you have in kind of those circumstances, but also, you know, just generally families being able to spend more time together. I can see we've got a few people listening in this evening. So if anybody does have any comments, any thoughts on the things that Warren has shared or some of the other things that cropped up this evening, I would love to hear from you. So please do text in. Now, some people weren't able to join this evening, but I did have a couple of people share some thoughts on X. I still keep calling it Twitter. I can't bring myself to say X, really, but it is X. So one was from Alex Barons. Now, Alex didn't quite go as far as changing the whole year. However, did suggest that the change they would make would be to fix the spring break in early April. And that was around keeping a consistent term length. They said they would like the summer holidays to stay as they are, because they felt it was a key recharge point for the kids, as they said, the kids and the staff. They also mentioned actually that it would be better for planning learning, but their thought was around saving a rush on planning. And I think that was around, you know, if a topic is longer than the half term or it doesn't quite fit in, that you then have that kind of mismatch between, do you try and squeeze it into the time you've got, or do you try and stretch it out and make it last a little bit longer when perhaps it wasn't designed to do so. So, you know, there are some connections there, actually, as I'm talking it through and I'm thinking about it as I go, some connections with what Warren did pick up on in terms of the curriculum planning. I had a short note also from someone whose X handle is at Mr. Reed, who said that no terms should be longer than 6 weeks. Mr. Reed didn't go into any sort of other kind of structure as such, but just to say that, you know, that 6 week feels doable, And perhaps the impact of that would be that the summer became 4 weeks rather than six, and then that you could perhaps extend some of the other breaks throughout the year. So it was really interesting to hear people's different thoughts, and there's definitely, as I mentioned earlier, definitely a sort of trend towards half terms, particularly becoming 2 weeks, and especially that one in the long autumn term. So I started then to think, you know, this is now, we've got schools that have already made these changes, made them work, made them sustainable. I was actually just picking up on that Warren said where he grew up, they actually had staggered holidays around the three towns where he lived, but that's since gone. So it'd be interesting to see if anywhere sort of reverts back to how it used to be. But I started thinking about, you know, where do we take this next? Where does it go in the future? We know there are lots of students who do struggle to access school for one reason or another. We know that during the pandemic, we had students working online, live lessons, connecting from home. So what if we started looking at blended learning, a hybrid model where students, you know, they don't have to access the school itself all of the time, and bring that sort of alongside a different structure to the school year. You know, if we didn't need students to be in the building and potentially therefore staff, what would that look like? If anyone listening's got thoughts on that, it'd be great to hear what you think. And that sort of came from me starting to think about, you know, comments I hear from staff that, you know, some schools are starting to allocate blocked PPA, and that staff can take that block of PPA at home. You know, but how can we make teaching and schoolwork more attractive to a generation who are used to working from home and seeing that as normal? And I don't just mean people at the start of their career, but the students who have gone through that learning in COVID, where they were at home, where they, you know, by and large managed to get on and, you know, learn in a different way, yes, but they were still learning. So if we started looking at completely restructuring, you know, the school year and school attendance, as in, do you have to go into the building? You know, what would that look like? We know there are some students who are on a model like that already, often known as EOTAS, or education other than at school. But that at the moment tends to be students who've got medical needs or special educational needs that's, you know, for some reason has been an issue or a barrier to them attending school full time. So, you know, a bit of blue sky thinking there. What would it look like if we did just go completely, you know, open? What would you do with your school day and your school year if you didn't actually have to have students on site all of the time? So just kind of pulling lots of those things together. So in summary, it is pretty clear that, you know, alternative models for the school year, they can work and they do work. And it was interesting hearing from Warren that this isn't new for him. This is something his school have been doing for, you know, a long time. I think he mentioned sort of joining the school in 2002 and bringing this in from sort of 2008. So, you know, that's been going a long time. For him, this is not something new. But for a lot of schools, it will be. And I think what was really clear talking to Warren and hearing his thoughts was he knows, you know your reason why. And we know that actually that's the case in many aspects of leadership, that what makes it work is really knowing your why, your reason for doing something. And, you know, putting that to a vote, that's letting the parents, those key stakeholders, decide if they want to go with that change. And that has been a really sort of successful strategy for his school to then build on that and move that forward and actually make the model sustainable, you know, in the long term. So just, you know, some takeaways, definitely some takeaways from me around the fact that these different models can work. I'm going to go and spend a little bit of time thinking about the curriculum, because that really has made me think. I don't know about anybody else, but really has made me think about what we do to facilitate the curriculum not having to have all that overlearning, and also to benefit staff workload at the same time. So some really, really key takeaways, really important points, and, you know, absolutely love talking to you, Warren. I can see that I think he's had to dip out now, but it was really, really interesting discussion. And he did make a very generous offer that, you know, if anybody wanted to contact him at the Premier Academy, he was happy to have a bit more of a chat about what he does. So I'm going to go to our sponsors one last time, and then I'm going to move on a little bit just before I finish up the show with something slightly different.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
Introducing Eton X from Eton College, a diverse range of quality online courses enabling young people to aspire and excel. Designed for self-study, these web-based courses empower your students with essential leadership, communication, and academic skills for success at school and beyond. Our Study Skills course sharpens their learning abilities, while the AI Fundamentals course equips them with vital digital know-how in a fast-changing world. Other popular courses include verbal communication, critical thinking, writing skills, resilience, creative problem solving, and many more. Offer the Eton X curriculum in your school for free. Visit etonx.com to find out more.
Okay, so as always, good to hear from our sponsors, and thank you to them for their continued support of our work here at Teachers Talk Radio. As I say, it was lovely to hear from Warren earlier on, and I just, you know, want to thank him one last time. Before I sort of move on and do my sort of well-being word for the weekend, which has become my little regular feature at the end of a show on a Friday night. So I'm sort of picking up on the ideas we've talked about, you know, doing something very different. I think I did use the phrase blue sky thinking earlier on. So my word for this week is creativity. It's something that for a long time I didn't think I particularly had or enjoyed. I suppose I had that sort of stereotypical association with creativity being to do with art. I could just about draw a stick man, but you know, anything other than that, I was a little bit stuck. But then sort of more recently thinking about actually creativity is so much more than that. And I'm just wondering, what is there this weekend that you can do which is creative? It doesn't have to be something that even takes that long. Again, being perhaps a sweeping statement, you know, people associate drawing and painting with perhaps things that might take a long time. But, it, you know, it doesn't have to be. It could be anything that you decide to have a go at. And, you know, it doesn't matter. Something that's been... it might sound obvious, but been a real sort of revelation almost to me, was that it doesn't matter if it's not perfect. It doesn't matter if it's not ready to go on show, or, you know, you wouldn't even let your best friend see it. But if you've had fun doing it and it's given you a bit of a creative outlet, then that's what it's all about. So, you know, as I say, it doesn't just have to be arts and crafts. It could be writing, could be playing an instrument, you know, perhaps a tune that you haven't played before, or picking up the instrument that you've learned at school and perhaps hasn't come out of its case for a while. But it can also be a really reflective process. Creativity can be a really reflective thing. What if you took some time? I'm just asking you now to think about this. What if you took some time to consider something that you took as the norm, that you accepted as the norm? Again, this is my little tie-in back to the school year structure. You know, we accept that as the norm. But if we if we start looking at things we do accept as norms and really challenge them, let your imagination run wild. What could you come up with if you had no parameters, if there were no restrictions on what you could come up with? Nothing to do with money, nothing to do with time, nothing to do with resources or space, people, you know, like being a child again, you know, when they draw something or when they tell you a story and it's completely wacky to us as adults, it's completely wacky, but what if we did that? What if we just let ourselves dream and let ourselves be free to create whatever it is that it is? You know, it's something that, you know, when I've kind of allowed myself to go into that space, it's been really refreshing, actually. And you know, if you're challenging your own thoughts, no one even has to know. You could be having a lion on a Saturday morning and no one has to know what you're doing. You don't even have to tell anyone. And I am just going to pick up on the subject of sort of writing within creativity, because it's also something that students, you know, from quite a young age, they kind of pick up this idea, like I did, that being creative is something that you have if you're good at drawing. Now, I work in an alternative provision, so we have a lot of students who, you know, they've struggled. Their mainstream has not worked for them. They quite often have, you know, socioeconomic barriers, that they also have mental health challenges. Some of them struggle with self-esteem. And for them to take risks, for them to show anything about themselves, can be a massive challenge. And I was really, really struck this week by the writing of a year 9 pupil who was given, the class were given the task of thinking about mental health, thinking about what that means to them. And I have actually put a screenshot of their work on our school's X page, Twitter page, as I keep calling it. But I am just going to read it out, because I was really, really, really struck by what they managed to produce when they realised that they too could be creative. So their short poem is called The Cracks. It goes like this. As people walk by, they look so happy. I laugh, I chill, I smile, but they don't see me hide in the walls, trying to blend in, falling in the cracks. No one hears my screams for help. No. They walk by, smile, laugh, and walk along the path, not falling in. I don't belong with them, as I'm falling down even further. They're watching and walking. I smile, I laugh, I hide in the walls. No one hears my screams anymore. No. Now, I would just say that that student is not someone who is at risk. You know, I don't want anybody to be concerned, but that was their, you know, when they were allowed to be free, when they realised that a poem doesn't have to rhyme, that was their creativity really, really coming through. And I just wanted to share that, because I thought it was an amazing piece of work from someone who, you know, I do know has struggled in a lot of ways. And to take that risk of being creative was huge for them. So, as I say, creativity is my well-being word for the weekend. It's been touched on actually by some of our other hosts, one being Maxine Coaching, who's talked about rest linked to creativity. Creativity is an effective form of rest. And you know, she's not the only person to have mentioned it in her show. And actually, on that note, it would be lovely if you were able to have a look at the topics that our other hosts are covering in the next week. And again, certainly actually some creative thinking there in terms of the different topics that are going to be covered. So that's my little thought I'm going to leave with you with this evening. What is it that you can do to be creative? I hope you enjoy that little process. And if anybody does want to share what they come up with, their creative thoughts, I'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much for joining me this evening. Once again, thank you to Warren for his fabulous contributions about his school. I hope you all have a lovely weekend.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.